Hello, hello. Welcome, listeners, to Northern Nightmares, episode 3.
Hello.
We're so glad that you found us, and we hope that all of you are thriving and living your best lives on this fine Monday morning.
I wish I was, too. Still in bed.
I'm so tired. I am joined today, as always, by my lovely co-host, Mom.
Hello.
Hi. How are you, Mom? How's life?
Well, starting tomorrow, we gain daylight. And I know when this comes out, it won't be as relevant. Anyway, we start gaining daylight and won't be as pertinent when this airs, but it will still be pertinent. Yeah. Every minute counts, and I am ready for daylight to come earlier in the day.
Right, I think we gain like a whole 3 seconds of daylight tomorrow or something like that.
Very, very minuscule amount, but it's still in the right direction.
Yes, today is the shortest day of the year, and I feel it. It's so dark all the time. Oh my God.
And it doesn't even really get really light, and we just had a huge dumping of snow, and so even with that, it's cloudy, and you look out the window, and it's still just dark outside. It's never... The sunny days are so far and few between.
So true. Really feeling it. You know, this right here, prime time, is why we say take your vitamin D at the end of every episode, because, oh my God. For Alaskans, it's kind of vital. How was your day yesterday since I last saw you?
Well, you're the one that had the crazy day running everything. I just went to work, so.
Yeah, so we had to go to Anchorage, which is fine. It was just like an all-day affair, sort of.
The day after a huge foot of snow falls, too, so the roads are crap, and it's just it's a journey, not a trip to Anchorage.
Exactly, and my husband's car isn't working, so we had to borrow Mom's car, and it was fine.
It's not a car.
It's a truck. Sorry. Yes.
It's a little truck, but it's a truck.
How dare I? We went to Anchorage. It was like a whole day affair. And then we got back to the valley finally. And I got home to a subpoena. So that's fun. I have to appear in court today.
As a witness, not a victim.
As a witness, yes. I don't really want to talk about what's going on just because it's like still in the cogs of the justice system. And it's not really fair to the parties involved to be talking about it before we have a ruling. Exactly. And I honestly don't know if I'll actually talk about it on the podcast. Maybe someday. But yeah, I don't even know what to expect today, so it'll be really fun. And by really fun, I mean not fun at all. And then I was getting ready to go to Taco Tuesday yesterday at Mom's house, and my car wouldn't start. So I need a new battery for my car. My husband's car fell apart. We're having a time right now, you guys. Send all your love, because we need it. So this is so fun. We've got kind of a shorter episode for you guys today. So sorry. Not sorry. I think that the story is still pretty important. So on that note, let's talk some murder with my mom.
Exciting.
All right, this episode does deal with some domestic violence, so trigger warning, proceed at your own risk. If you need to skip this one, that's totally fine. I wanted to cover this case in particular because it deals with the matter of stalking. And since January is Stalking Awareness Month, here in the US at least, I thought it would be important to cover a case about stalking that really got me thinking. If you or someone that you know is experiencing or has experienced stalking in the past, we here at Northern Nightmares want you to know that there are resources for you. There's a company by the name of Spark, whose link will be in the description below. SPARC stands for Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center. So they're going to be an excellent resource and database for you to get the help that you need to protect yourself against this unwanted attention. Stalking is a very serious crime that is not taken very seriously in the United States, unfortunately, and a lot of time nothing is done until it is too late.
A stalker takes away a person's ability to feel safe in their own house, in their own life. And that's not fair to anybody. Nobody should have to experience that. So if you or someone you know is experiencing that or something similar, please don't hesitate to reach out to Spark or other resources in your area that can help you navigate this difficult situation.
Today, we're going to talk about a couple. We've got Roger Keeling, who is 54 years old at the time that the events of the story unfolded. Mm-hmm. He is in a 3-year-long relationship at this point with a woman that we're going to call Sarah.
Okay.
Sarah is not her real name. And I don't know it. And even if I did, I wouldn't tell you guys because she has very good reason for wanting to keep her name out of the press. And it is nowhere to be found. And honestly, I'm not looking. Mm-hmm. So we're going to call her Sarah. The two of them were living in Fairbanks at the time this story kind of unfolds, which is sort of smack dab in the middle of the state, pretty far north from Anchorage and the more populous areas.
It's like 6 hours north to drive it from here.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And it's a trek.
Yes. Their relationship was anything but happy. Obviously, something must have been going right in the beginning for them to have even started out going out in the first place. But Roger was physically abusing Sarah.
Oh.
A lot of abusive relationships tend to have this sort of break and lull pattern or cycle where there's this love bombing phase where the abuser showers the victim with love and affection and attention to the point where the victim is willing to overlook the bad parts of the relationship because they're not so bad. I can deal with this as long as the attention and the affection keeps coming.
And he might be right. Maybe my family are a bunch of jerks and I shouldn't spend time with them. All my friends are assholes. Maybe I shouldn't spend time with them.
Right.
Maybe I should spend all my time with you because I love you.
Abusers who are physically abusive are almost always abusive in other ways as well. And the mental abuse sort of works is just breaking down your armor and defenses.
Support systems.
Connections, everything that helps you feel like you're independent. They kind of make it so that you're the only person in the world that understands them and you feel like they're the only ones who could ever love you. The problem with the love bombing phase is that it's temporary. And it's quickly replaced by the tension building phase of the cycle, where things just start to build up and become bigger and bigger deals. So, you know, at first, like and this is like a progressive part of the cycle. So it'll start with maybe you forget something or something like that. The victim forgets something. And the abuser is like just starting to show their narcissistic side again and starting to like put you down for it again. And it just slowly becomes like bigger and bigger blow-ups and bigger fights until you get to the pressure release phase of the cycle where the abuser just loses control and takes all of the pent-up anger and frustration and resentment out on their victim, which is just never, ever the victim's fault. And then the love bombing phase happens again and the cycle just repeats itself over and over and over and it can be very difficult for the victim to break.
Understood.
So this is kind of what Sarah was dealing with at this point in her life and it was very, very difficult for her.
Do we know how old she was?
I do not.
I was just wondering if he was older than her, a lot older, same age.
I know. I don't know. Wish I knew.
That's fine.
The sources that I'm going to mention in this episode, there was a lot of news coverage on this case. However, all of the news coverage came from this one press release from police. So police released a statement in like just a few months ago, actually in 2021. So the police released a statement about kind of what happened, and that's what all of the news sources sort of built on. So as far as like further information, it's just not there, but I'm going to give you guys everything I have, and I think it's still a really important story to tell, even if it is on the shorter side. So we've got this cycle that's happening, and Sarah's not happy about it, and she is suffering because of it. We don't know a lot about the time that they spent together in their relationship, but it's a pretty safe bet that this cycle just was ever present in their lives. Most of the stories that I found, and this press release even, just picks up after they've already broken up. So, they broke up because Sarah couldn't take it anymore, which, I mean, requires so much strength and confidence and self-love to realize that she didn't deserve this, and she got away.
Which is the most dangerous part of a domestic violence relationship is the breakup, and when you think that you're free.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And unfortunately, this would prove true in Sarah's case as well. Yeah, she couldn't take it anymore. She got out. I don't know a lot of details as far as like friends or family who are able to help her out of the situation, but I do know that in these situations, a lot of the time, the support and urging of friends and family is a lot of times what will help the victim sort of come forward and come up, give them the confidence and the strength that they need to break the cycle. Whatever the situation was, Sarah was able to leave him, and I am so proud of her for it. After they broke up, Roger remained obsessed with Sarah. He stalked her for months and tried winning her back. When that didn't work, he eventually attacked her in October of 2020. He put his hands around Sarah's neck and he told her that he should rip her heart out, and he threatened to burn her house down.
Nightmare.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So the police were called that night and they came immediately. Sarah was granted a restraining order against him, and he was charged with misdemeanor assault. So he was released with an ankle monitor, and in spite of this, he immediately began stalking her again. He was arrested multiple times for violating the restraining order. There was one time he slashed her tires of her car, and then there was another that he followed her home. And then another time, he called her parents, who were living in the lower 48 at the time. So they were living in the continental United States. So we sort of call it the lower 48.
We also call it you're going to go outside. Outside is to the lower 48.
Like we're in friggin' prison or something.
Right, you're going outside?
You getting out? Take me with you.
No, I'm just going to Idaho. It's fine.
Bring me back some potatoes that aren't rotten.
Anything. I'm going. Let's go to California. Bring me back some avocados and tomatoes. I don't care what season it is.
We need a fresh produce dealer, like not a drug dealer. We need fresh produce dealers up here.
Here, look in the back of my trunk. I've got some oranges.
I've got the goods.
Peaches.
Yes. Oh, no. Can you tell we've lived in Alaska a little too long? Damn you, COVID. Okay, so he called her parents in Lower 48, and he sent her dozens of threatening emails from these quote-unquote disguised email accounts, but he did a really shitty job at that. So when I say dozens, I mean he sent over 20, which, I mean, God, that's just a lot, okay? I mean, I know I get dozens of spam emails every day. I can't imagine someone spamming you with hate mail. I mean, that's just so gross, and I hate it. In one of the emails, he described what Sarah was doing when she was on vacation at Denali National Park.
Ooh, yuck.
Yeah. So not only is he following her around Fairbanks, but he's also following her when she leaves Fairbanks. And they could tell that it was this guy, Roger, who was sending the emails, because not only was he talking about like this trip that he met and he had the history of stalking, like it fit his pattern, but also he put double periods at the end of his sentences, which is a very unique writing quirk. So, and also grammatically incorrect. So fuck you, Roger. And he also talked about events that only Roger would have known from their 3 years of dating. He also used his own fucking email address as a backup for the fake ones. So, I mean, just a tiny bit of sleuthing. Like, he used it as a recovery email.
Awesome.
I mean, that's not even hard to figure out. Fucking idiot. And, of course, the IP addresses, once they looked at them, were consistent. That the emails were sent from were consistent with Roger's. So, this guy sent them. He also planted handwritten notes on her running route.
Ew.
Yeah. Oh, so gross. Scary. Can you imagine just going for a run to blow off some steam because your psycho ex is following you around everywhere? I mean, you just would never feel safe.
Ever.
And I don't think Sarah was feeling safe or protected or supported at all by police. Every time she would go to them with these incidences, and she would, I mean, he'd get a slap on the wrist for violating the restraining order, and that's about it. I mean, she was not adequately protected, and she felt unsafe every day of her life.
I can't imagine.
That amount of stress, I mean, it had to have been causing some serious medical problems as well. I mean, if you were, there have been multiple studies, and I can link them below if you're interested, that have shown the relationship between stress and physical ailments. And not only that, but the constant fight or flight response being activated is incredibly dangerous for your body and can cause some really serious health deficits, which I'll link these studies because they're an interesting read, and I think it's important to know that if you're feeling really shitty after you've been in survival mode for too long, that's probably why you're feeling pretty shitty. So, and it's just, it's awful. Okay, so notes along the running route.
That's disgusting.
Ugh, so atrocious. One of the notes on this, like, string of letters along her running route.
So it's kind of like the old Burma Shave signs, and they were red signs along the highway, and they were jokes, and it was like five signs, and they'd have a couple of words on each sign, like,
yeah.
And then it'd go, Burma Shave at the end. Roger Asshole at the end.
Kind of sort of like that, but like horror mode. But I found one source that said they were all in a backpack and that the backpack was left on the learning lounge. And then for some reason, she decided to look in it. But I found other sources said it was like strung along the running route. So I don't know exactly which one is accurate, but there were notes on her running route about her. Fucked up. Don't like it. One of the notes talked about how Sarah had been cursed by black magic.
Awesome.
Points for creativity, I guess.
I guess.
Not really, though.
The devil is coming out of her skin.
It's Roger. Roger's the devil.
Right.
God. She's just
exercising him.
Getting him out.
Not exercise. Exercise.
Exorcise. So he was finally arrested for stalking a year ago in December 2020. And while he was in prison, he began asking anyone and everyone he met in prison if they knew someone that he could hire to kill Sarah.
Not even safe when he's behind bars.
No.
Awesome.
His cellmate wanted him to shut up because of how much he was talking about getting someone to kill Sarah. He was like, this is incessant and I'm tired of it. So I'll tell you what, I've got a hitman that
is named Officer Bob. I mean, Bob.
I'm surprised his cellmate wasn't like an undercover cop or something, but he's not. Anyway, the cellmate is like, listen, he told police or reporters or somebody. It was one of my sources. He told them, he was like, I just wanted the guy to shut up. But I told him that I knew a guy who would kill Sarah and that I would take care of arranging the details for him. And apparently Roger was pretty excited about this. Started telling the cellmate all of her habits, all of her
running route,
just everything. He gave the cellmate like this detailed map of the inside, the layout of her house.
Gross.
All of this stuff. So they negotiated for like 3 days, and the cellmate was like, listen, I'll put it together. I don't know what his fee is going to be, but I want a $1,500 finder's fee for finding the hitman.
That doesn't seem like very much.
Roger was like, jumped on it. He was like, okay, fine. So he wired
the best $1,500 I ever spent.
Oh my God. It's like fucking, it reminded me of Tiger King and Carol Baskins and right? Fucking Joe Exotic's whole murder for hire plot. It's just stupid. And I hate it. Okay, so he paid $500 immediately. He wired it to the cellmate's mom, was how he paid it. Because, I mean, these guys are in prison, right, so... Right.
Can't just hand him $1,500.
Right. The cellmate became a jailhouse informant and went to police with this information.
Of course.
I don't know if he got to keep the $500. But I feel like if anyone in this story deserved it, it would be the cellmate who, in the end...
I'm thinking that the $500 would go into evidence.
Probably.
Anyway.
The investigators searched Roger's house, and they found a lot of notes and documents that supported the existence of the murder for hire plot. I mean, he wrote about it in journals and like...
At his house or in his cell?
At his house.
So before he went to jail.
Yeah. So he was already looking. Yeah. There's a... they found the floor plan of Sarah's house and drawings that Roger made of Sarah being hurt in numerous ways.
You know how long they'd been broke up by this point?
I do not...
Months, though, you said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was... Definitely at least over the course of months, if not a couple of years. In October of 2020 is when he attacked her and got the misdemeanor and the ankle monitor.
And then it was December 2020.
Yeah, that he went to jail. Correct. Yeah, there's one drawing that sort of went viral in association with this case. It was a hand-drawn picture that Roger drew of Sarah's house engulfed in flames. And I can post that on our Instagram account. It's really freaking creepy. And it's got, like, these ghost figures coming out of the house with the flames, like, engulfing the house. And there are three ghost figures. So I don't know if it was, like, supposed to be, like, him and Sarah and...
something.
I don't know.
The devil being exorcised from her body.
Right. Yeah. So pretty fucking creepy and awful. In August of this year, he got sentenced to 12 years in prison for the murder for hire plot and for the vandalism and the harassment and a couple of things, because the maximum amount that you can get for murder for hire plots is 10 years.
That isn't carried out. If it's carried out, then you'd get murder.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this is just for hiring someone.
So the most you can get is 10 years, and he got 12 because of all the other crap.
Yes. He got 12. But I mean, so far, nothing that the court has done has been successful in keeping this man away from Sarah. Police keep calling this story a huge success because of how difficult it is for our current justice system to prosecute cases of stalking and domestic violence. But for me, this case just leaves a lot to be desired. I feel sort of torn because, I mean, like, 10 years in prison is a long time. I mean, 10 years of your life. But I mean, when you think about...
When will he actually get out, though? With there's good behavior or something like that.
Exactly. And with this man being so narcissistic and such a manipulator, if he were determined to get out early, it's something that he could probably achieve.
Is he being held in Alaska?
Yes, he's being held in Fairbanks Correctional Facility. Hopefully, for the next 12 years.
Do you know where that should be? In the middle of the frickin' tundra, 1,000 miles from anywhere, which you can do up there. And just freezing, freezing cold weather in the wintertime and nothing for miles and miles and miles. And that's all you get to look at and that's all you get to think about in the dark in the wintertime.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, 10 years, yeah, it's like a long time for someone who didn't actually successfully kill someone. But the attempt was there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He hired someone to kill, he means business. And this is apparently important to him if he's willing to pay $1,500 in just a finder's fee, you know? I mean, it doesn't feel like justice for Sarah because, I mean, in 12 years, Roger will be in his 60s and Sarah's going to have to keep looking over her shoulder for the rest of her life once he's out, which just doesn't feel fair to her. He's already taken so much from her and so much safety and so much security, and she's never going to be the same.
Even when he's inside, she can't feel safe.
Right, because he's still...
Who says he's not plotting again?
Exactly.
I mean, he's already got the diagrams drawn of her house.
God, I mean, seriously. It's not like they're keeping him in solitary for these 12 years. So she's got to be paranoid that somebody might come and find her and kill her because...
Somebody he talks to actually knows somebody who will do that.
Right, and not rat him out to the police. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to be a jailhouse snitch in prison, so I mean, I can't imagine... I'm so glad that cellmate came forward in the first place, but I feel so... I wish there was a way for Sarah to feel safe and secure again. And I just don't feel like that's happening with this prison sentence or with this justice
that they keep wanting to call it. It kind of just leaves a bitter taste in the mouth. And it's sad that this is the success story. You know what I mean? This is what police are considering a success story. And I know that stalking cases are so difficult for the justice system to wrap their head around, and so difficult for the justice system to say, like, to take seriously and take as a serious threat. And, you know, typically the police won't get involved unless there's harm done. And it's just, it's sad because, I mean, you shouldn't be legally allowed to, like, threaten someone's safety, to take away someone's sense of safety. I think that that's so important for just our development as humans, for our existence as people, and for our social, mental, and emotional, and physical health. It just, it doesn't seem right that someone can get away with stalking and threatening and harassing for so long.
Stalking's a tough one. Yeah, I mean, it's come a long ways in even the last 10 years. It's come a long ways in prosecuting and being able to prove stalking. But of course, so has our technology. I mean, if you're stalking somebody and I'm packing this supercomputer around in my pocket that we call a cell phone, and it has every record of every phone call I receive, it has record of every email I get, it has record of every text message I get. So I think it's a lot easier nowadays to prove stalking just because you can show the threatening text messages. It's not, and also you have trace of where it came from. The notes on the side of a running path aren't going to be as easily traceable as your text messages or that sort of thing.
Right.
And I know your grandmother, my mom, had a stalker ex-husband, and right when they broke up, and he put super glue in her locks, he left notes all, but you couldn't prove that it was him. She had restraining orders against him and stuff, and the cops are like, well, we can't prove that it was him that did it, so there isn't much we can do. I mean, that was 25 years ago. You weren't even born yet. And
it just feels like we're failing these people, mm-hmm. you know, who are just, like, pleading for help from the justice system and from the police who are supposed to protect them, and just not feeling like they're getting it. And that is what just sort of makes me uncomfortable about the whole situation. And it bugs me, too, and kind of gets under my skin that attempted murder can carry a possible life sentence, but murder for hire, just because it has extra steps, is only 10 years, you know? And I feel like Roger, I just don't see him stopping. And I could be wrong. And he did have a psych evaluation done in Seattle early this year. And I didn't have access to that or couldn't find records for it and, like, what the results were. But this type of behavior, I mean, I studied psychology. I've been studying psychology for 5 years now. And it's just, this type of behavior doesn't just turn off. It's going to take severe therapy and a lot of it. And I don't think he's getting that in prison. And I just don't see him just dropping this for 12 years and then just living his life, you know? He's the type of obsessive, narcissistic asshole. He's just gonna sit on it and dwell on it and blame her, who has done nothing wrong. And it just makes me kind of sick. And I heard this story and I was just very upset by it. So I figured I'd share it with you all and let you guys be disgruntled as well. If you yourself are in an abusive relationship and struggling to get out, there are many resources that you can use that can help you sever ties with your abuser and get out in a way that is safe and respectful of your dignity. The number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline is 800-799-SAFE-7233. Again, that's 800-799-SAFE-7233. We thank you guys so much for listening, and there are plenty of resources all over the country that can help you and provide support financially in terms of housing and food and helping you get away from someone who does not have your best interests at heart. You guys stay safe and give yourself some extra self-love today, and don't forget to take your vitamin D.